This is Christopher Walken, and you're listening to the Fantasy Football Helpers Podcast. Valuable fantasy football advice with some entertainment thrown in. Hey, Todd, it wouldn't kill you to play some competitive sports once in a while, would it?
Yes, time for some action. Time for some action. Welcome to the Fantasy Football Helpers Podcast, continuing our draft series recap, giving you guys as much coverage on the rookies as possible. Try to assign fantasy value based on their situations with their current teams that just drafted them. And I couldn't think of a better guy to talk about receivers with than this guy here, Matt Harmon of Backyard Banter and thefootballguys.com. What's happening, Matt?
Hey, not much, George. Just it's always that weird, the week after the draft. You know, there's so much build up to it. And then it just kind of all comes crashing down, and we're like, oh, what do we have to talk about now? But it's actually, it's funny because I think that post-draft analysis and, team fit and scheme and surroundings, everything is almost maybe more important, especially with fantasy implications to the discussion than pre-draft. But it's always an odd feeling.
Absolutely. Well, it's like Christmas. Like, you don't know what your presents are going to be yet. And then once Christmas comes, you open them, you're like, oh, this is our new toy. All right, cool.
And you're like, what the hell is this tree doing?
Exactly. It's like the New Year's comes, and yeah, there's a whole other thing. But yeah, until like rookie draft camp start, we start hearing about how players are coming along and what they're doing. And we see those Vine videos of, guys making one-handed catches in camp, and we're like, oh man, we can't wait to see this guy. But I totally agree with you. But I agree with you as well that this is also an important time because you need to kind of talk about what to expect and what kind of offenses these teams are going to be running, how these pieces are all going to fit together. So this is kind of the beginning of that. Now, you cover you've been on here before, but in case people are listening for the first time, just kind of go over real quickly your reception perception and what it does.
Sure. So reception perception is pretty much, in my opinion, and I'm biased because I'm the creator, but I think it's the most efficient and complete way to analyze wide receivers. It's an in-depth charting process, and it covers basically everything that a receiver does on the field. I put a quantifiable percentage to it. Success rate versus coverage, or SRVC, is the main metric, and then there's also a contested catch conversion rating, a tackle breaking metric, everything, so it's giving you a complete sample of what a wide receiver is. And it's pretty simple. There are route charts to illustrate how often a receiver runs every route, and then also how often they're getting open on every route. So it really lets you know exactly, cuts out, the BS or the noise of, what's going on with the quarterback or what's going on with the rest of the offense, and just lets you know what the receiver is being asked to do and what he's doing well. So, like I said, it's just a complete methodology for evaluating the position. And it's something that, I'm working on more and more in depth and trying to make it better as it goes. But it's something that I think is really a worthwhile tool right now.
It definitely is. And one of my favorite things about it is just how nuanced you get in terms of the things you look at for receivers that most people don't really consider to be important. Like, I know I was watching a film room you did with Matt Waldman where you discussed late hands was one of the things that I noticed that was pretty interesting. And also just the way he runs his route, if he's giving, if he's running a route down the sideline, if he stays within those hash marks to give the quarterback enough space to kind of throw it down towards the sideline, give him room to make the play, and also just all the other stuff you cover, like, late ball adjustments and that kind of thing. It's really fascinating stuff, so it's definitely pretty cool. I know, just following you on Twitter, so some of the guys you were kind of high on coming out pre-draft and some of the guys you weren't so high on. Now, what were some of the draft moves that you saw that made you excited? You wanted to get your reception perception analysis out to the people who were interested in those guys for their teams. I guess that's kind of what I'm asking.
Well, I didn't do, just because of the lack of availability for all 22 film for college prospects, I don't have reception perception for all of these rookies. I should just make that clear right off the top.
Yeah.
You do have to have the complete, you know, film angle in order to chart all the routes or anything. I'd love to be able to do it off broadcast angle, but I don't think I'd be able to do it accurately. So I don't do it off that. I just, so which is why it's more of a tool I use for NFL guys. But obviously, all these receivers, I think I put 35 through like a full evaluation and ranked and everything. So as far as guys I was really excited about, a few guys, one of the guys I did do reception perception on was Amari Cooper, and we talked about him last time I was on the podcast.
Yes.
I liked where he landed. While he wasn't my favorite receiver this year, I actually preferred Kevin White and Doriel Green Beckham just from a pure talent perspective to Cooper.
Yeah.
I really like where he landed with Derek Carr. They really ran kind of a short passing game last year, and I think that's really what fits Cooper well, because he's such a good route runner and he's so polished for a young player that I think he can really excel in that short to intermediate game, and be a guy that can annually post, you know, about 80 catches and over 1,000 yards, and maybe starting right this year he can get right down to it. So that was one that right off the bat jumped out to me.
Yeah. That was I'm glad you brought up the route thing and just the fact that Amari Cooper and the Raiders are a good fit because of the short routes, and that's kind of where Cooper excels. You obviously, when you chart receivers, you do a lot of route charting. So have you noticed anything, and this is a question I had listed here, just what kind of route is more or less important when it comes to receivers? You just mentioned having 80 catches. Is that because of he runs the short routes effectively versus maybe a deep receiver who's not going to have as many catches because he doesn't run the short routes well?
Yeah, well, it just depends. Like, I think there are more routes that are high percentage routes for catches. Like, you know, a slant route comes to mind right off the bat. And that's where you see a lot of these highly productive fantasy receivers run a high percentage of slant routes because they're so easy to just get the ball, and it's an easy read for the quarterback, and it's an easy route for the receiver to just get into the open field and make plays. So that's one that I think is really important. Being able to and it's not like I say it's easy to get production off for a receiver, but there you'd be surprised how some NFL guys really struggle to get off press coverage and then get into the slant route with good timings and crisp breaks. Now, Cooper's really good at that, so that's one I just mentioned.
Yeah.
So that I think he could rack up a lot of production that way.
Yeah.
Slant routes are one. Another one is like a flat route, which is just, it looks like an out route, but it's a lot more shallow, and it's a softer break, and they just get into the sidelines. It's usually really effective against zone coverage. And obviously, then there are other ones like, if you can run a dig route really well, you'll produce a lot of you'll get a lot of production right away. So yeah, it's not necessarily like a limiting thing to be a good short route runner, because that's really how a lot of these guys, even really talented receivers like Josh Gordon, when he was on the field, he charted a high percentage of slant routes. Same with like a Julio Jones, because they have that big body to get to the open field. So that's one that really is you see a lot of production coming from that route.
And that's such a great thing to discover, because I think a lot of people look at, you know, 40 times, and even guys like Julio Jones, you see him in the end zone like, oh, he's sick, you know, 6'5", 6'6", he's just going to jump over the defender and score touchdowns that way. But they don't see how, you know, those short routes, how much they come into play as well.
Yeah, they really are. I mean, a perfect example is a guy like Demaryius Thomas, who's, you know, that 6'3", 223, super fast body type. But a lot of his production comes from getting into the open field. He's not a big dominator at the catch point. He's not he's not one of the better deep threats in the NFL. I have a lot of guys who chart out better than he does as a deep route runner. But because he's so good on those slants in the screen game, that's where he gets a lot of his production. So yeah, it's definitely something that I think gets overlooked.
Absolutely. Just wanted to ask a few more. You've been doing this now for how long exactly? Like total.
Reception perception?
Yeah.
I started with the first article that I debuted was about almost a year ago now, June of last year. And then, but I've been like working and refining and, you know, testing the process way before I put an article out on it. So it's been almost like about a year and a half now that I've been doing this.
Okay, so now, were there any, like, big-picture type theories that you maybe had going in? I imagine you probably had some biases because you hadn't started it yet, so you didn't know. And then as you went along, kind of discovered new things. Were there any things that really jumped out to you while you were doing it?
Yeah, I wanted to kind of explore the difference between, like, big, just in general, like, big receivers and small receivers. Because I don't know if you remember this, but the draft Twitter community in general was really split on like the big receiver, small receiver thing in the during the 2014 draft class. So that was something that I really wanted to examine, was what is like, what's the quantifiable difference between these receivers, and is there any? You know, like, do big receivers specifically win one way, whereas small receivers specifically win one way? And that's something that I've definitely learned a lot of, and just more on like a case by case player thing. I wanted to know, like, who's just, is a guy like very productive? Like, I just talked about Thomas, like, as a really productive guy, but doesn't chart very well, you know, as far as his success rate versus coverage metrics, because he's a limited, kind of inefficient route runner. So I wanted to just be able to put a, like, strip a lot of those biases away, but definitely the big receiver, small receiver thing was something that I really wanted to look at.
And that's great that you brought that up. One of the receivers I think you did the best job of was Devin Smith for Ohio State, because I saw a lot of comps to him being like a DeSean Jackson type, and I think that was because people were looking at it because of his size. But then you talk about him, you know, in the film room, and you basically go, like, this guy loves to catch in traffic, which is something DeSean Jackson doesn't do much of at all. And you just, I think you debunk some of those theories that he really, maybe he's the same physical makeup as DeSean Jackson, but he doesn't really play like him, which I thought was very fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good thing that I, especially like down the line, once I've been doing this reception-perception thing for a few years, I want to be able to like make cross-player comparison. Notes like, you know, like they score well on this route, so does this player, so maybe they're a little more comparable than just like a size, you know, a size sort of thing. But you're right, yes, Smith's one of my favorite prospects from this year's draft, and I'm not totally enthused on his landing spot or anything, but he was one of my favorites to study just because there were so many ways that I thought the national conversation on him and really popular opinion was just kind of off. You're right, he's a guy that he combines a lot of nuances in his routes while also being a really fearless player in traffic. So you wonder why he was so limited at Ohio State, but sometimes that's just how things happen when you're a scheme-based offense in college, and I think that he has a lot more to offer in the pros than he does, than he did at college.
Absolutely. And, you know, just from a fantasy football perspective, obviously we're a fantasy site, and I was kind of hesitant to look at Devin Smith as a potential guy. I'm like, oh, this, you know, this guy will be, you know, feast or famine type, but then after watching you kind of analyze him, I went, wow, there's something more to him. He almost made me want to draft him, but of course, like you just mentioned, the situation that he ended up in wasn't as good as it could be. What do you think of like his situation? You just mentioned you didn't like it. What don't you like about it?
Well, it's just like he doesn't have a clear path to playing time. Like if he had gone like the whole time, you know, at the end of round one, I was really hoping like I'll just get one of these guys that I really liked to Baltimore. You know, I was hoping that Smith would go there because he was just a natural fit with a deep passer like Flacco and. Yeah. And also, you know, that's just, they had a lot of opportunity there. And obviously, Perryman was the one that ended up in Baltimore. Maybe we can talk about him a little bit later. But Smith, yeah, in New York is just like I said, he's like he's capped at the third option. You know, I don't think that in his first 2 years or so, he probably will not beat out Brandon Marshall or Eric Decker. Those are two proven receivers, and it's a really high-end tandem. However, I do think that Smith is going to get those deep chances right away, but then you wonder who's going to get him the ball. I think that Chan Gailey can do a lot with quarterbacks, and you've seen it in the past. You know, you've seen him work guys like Tyler Thigpen or Ryan Fitzpatrick, who he has on the team this year. He's turned them into viable NFL quarterbacks. So maybe Geno Smith has a little bit of a revival. I wouldn't totally be surprised. But like I said, I don't know, just don't know how many opportunities he's going to get early on. But I think eventually he ends up becoming the starter opposite Eric Decker after Marshall, you know, gets traded again or you know, starts to slow down.
Or so, has some sort of weird moment where, yeah, he freaks out in the locker room.
That just seems to be Marshall's MO. So I expect Smith to eventually start there, but like I said, it's just going to take a little while longer than I hope.
Absolutely. So, but this is the great thing about this, is it's something that when you evaluate an individual's talent, that never goes away. So the teams may change, but he'll always be, you know, even if he gets, if Devin Smith, something happens with him, he goes to another team at some point, you know, you could always refer back to this and just kind of know the type of player he is. And of course, I imagine receivers maybe change their game as their careers go along. They change the way they play. Is that something that you are interested in at all with this process too, or is that...
As far as their development and how they change as prospects,
yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely something I want to consider. There's a few guys, you know, in the league, I guess, that you could say have developed their game and changed, and especially older players. Now, that's actually something I want to explore. Like, you know, you see some guys. Perfect example is a guy like Santana Moss, who we're both probably familiar with because, you know, we live
in Virginia.
Yeah. So what was interesting about Moss was he was such a, you know, when he was young, he was such a deep threat. He was a really fast guy who just got down the field, specifically when he was with the Jets. But you saw as he started to slow down, in particular, particularly when Griffin first came to the league, he kind of developed into that really reliable slot receiver. So I like to see players like that who kind of adjust their game to fit like a declining skill set.
Yeah.
So I definitely think that players kind of are who they are. They don't change as much as we think when they get into the league. And I think that will bear some of these guys that I charted this year in college. I think that'll bear over into their NFL careers, especially early.
Yeah.
However, there are definitely some instances where that happens, and it's something that I would like to, you know, quantify and explore.
Absolutely. And one guy I thought of just off the top of my head was Anquan Boldin when he was with Arizona as part of the tandem with Fitzgerald, more of a big play guy. And then Baltimore kind of reinvents himself, becomes a possession receiver, and it was probably one of the most valuable players in that Super Bowl run that they had because he kind of took his game to another level. He didn't really do it during the regular season, though, so I don't really know how that impacts fantasy-wise. But, yeah, the veteran-savvy thing is something very interesting, and I would totally be interested if you did continue to explore that. All right, well, let's talk a little bit more about the rookie receivers. Now, you mentioned Breshad Perriman, now that we're on the Baltimore, in the Baltimore or Ravens area here. What do you think of, because Baltimore is kind of the team we all wanted to see the receivers go to, and because of the target potential there, what do you think of Perryman's potential for the Ravens in year one?
Yeah, I like Perryman, especially right off the bat. Like you mentioned, and like I said a little earlier, this is a prime landing spot for a young receiver. I've seen him compared to Torrey Smith, and while I guess I can understand that to a certain extent because they're both really fast, I think that Perryman has more physicality to his game. I think he is going to be better in the short areas of the field. One thing I really liked about him was while he is definitely, you know, an athletic guy, I thought he showed some potential to be a really good route runner. He tips off his routes a little bit, and that's a problem. However, he's got really good quickness, really good spatial awareness to know when to break. Obviously, you talk about the drops, and that is something that is an issue. However, I do think that his drops issues are correctable. There are some drops that are harder to fix than others. When I think Perryman, he tracks the ball well, he gets it into his hands, he makes tough catches, or he makes easy catches routinely, but it's just some of the ones where he needs to work on that late hands issue. Sometimes he's even a little too early. Timing that just right needs to be something that he works out of his game. So, all in all, I think that he's a player who there might be some mistakes early on, but he's not nearly as raw as people make him out to be. So I think he's ready to contribute right away. And he's one of those guys that we talked about, the high percentage routes. Like he can kind of be used like a Demaryius Thomas. Like let him run down the field a little bit, but also, you know, have him run those short slants and screens, those plays that get him into space and allow him to just use his athletic ability. So
yeah.
I think it's a really good landing spot for him.
Yeah, and I think it's a great landing spot too. And I always go back to Darius Hayward Bay from Oakland when I think of a great athlete who couldn't catch the ball very well. I wonder just how much the situation kind of plays into it, because obviously going to Oakland at the time, when Darius Hayward Bay, I think he was drafted in like 2008 or something like that. It was somewhere around 2009. Yeah. So obviously the quarterback situation was terrible there. But you got a guy like Joe Flacco, somebody who can make those timing based throws that, like you mentioned, and a much more stable franchise. The Ravens have been good for a long time. So I agree. I just think it's a better situation for him, even if he does struggle with drops at the time. I mean, Torrey Smith also struggled with drops in his career in the beginning, and if you compare the two. Torrey Smith was still productive. He kind of slowed down a little bit last year, but I do think the situation makes a big difference in this case. And with a stable franchise like Baltimore with a good quarterback, I think Perryman will be just fine. All right, well, let's talk. Let's see, what else can we talk about here? Let's talk about the Eagles, because that's another another potential situation there for a receiver to emerge now with Jeremy Maclin gone. And it's almost like they just took his clone to me and just kind of and just drafted him out of USC and Nelson Aguilar. I think that's how you say it, Aguilar. And what do you think of his potential in year one? I know you were high on him as well.
Yeah, I love Aguilar. And you mentioned how he compares to Jeremy Maclin. I think he is better than Jeremy Maclin, honestly. And I think he, potentially is better than Jeremy Maclin, because he shows a lot more refinement than Maclin did coming out of college, and even than Maclin did, you know, when he was having his breakout season with the Eagles. The great part about Aguilar is that I don't really think he has one big weakness, but he certainly has a lot of strengths. He's fearless. Another one of these guys that's smaller, but he's fearless in traffic. He can make contested catches. He's really comfortable, like, getting his hands away from his body. So, you know, some of these quarterbacks in Philadelphia aren't great. I don't think that he's going to have problems with an inaccurate passer. However, he's also really good on those timing-based routes. So if Sam Bradford comes in and throws with a lot of anticipation, Aguilar should be good at that. He's also really great. He's just one of the best run-after-catch players in this class. He kind of reminds me of, like, a Golden Tate in that way. Like, he's a smaller guy, but again, you know, takes really strong cuts, is really balanced and aggressive after the catch. So, and he's also, like, he's pretty fast. He's an athletic guy, too. So I don't really see what his weakness is, and I think that he is going to step in and be the most talented guy on that Eagles roster right away, and should become the number one receiver, you know, by the middle of this year at worst. It's definitely, you know, Chip knows skill position players. You know, for all his flaws, maybe as a personnel decision maker, or, you know, whatever, some of his other questionable things. He knows skill position talent, and like we saw him take Jordan Matthews last year in the second round, a guy who some people had mixed opinions on. But he put him in the perfect role right away for his success, and he produces a rookie.
Yeah, he did. He was good.
I think that Aguilar is going to be that, but better. I mean, this is what I said about it in my report was that, you know, he's a really safe player. Like, at worst, he's Julian Edelman. You know, that he, you know, he'll be a decent slot receiver. You know, but if he ends up in a high volume role, he has a really high ceiling because of, like, you know, I was thinking like Randall Cobb in Green Bay, like he could be that easily. But then he gets in this role in Philly, and I'm like, boom, this is perfect. This is exactly like the high end comparison of his career. This is exactly what you would have wanted.
Yeah, I'm just trying to remain objective here while you talk about him as an Eagles fan, because I'm just getting excited just listening to you. But
I'm not objective about him at all. So, he was one of my favorite players that I scouted this year. You know, he's not Odell Beckham Jr., but when I was watching Beckham last year, like pretty much 2 minutes into his tape, I was like, okay, this works. This is a really good player.
Yes.
Aguilar was kind of the same feeling. Like I said, I'm not comparing the two, but you watch him and you just right away, you're like, okay, this is an NFL receiver. This works. So
yeah, absolutely.
He's been a guy I've been high on kind of throughout the process. So
just go a little off topic. I don't know if you saw this. I posted this a couple times, but his interview at his pro day, I listened to him talk, and he was just the guy that had that, I don't know, that really brooding confidence, I guess, like just not too high, not too low. And I was really in awe of just how well-spoken he was for a young guy. I know, you know, that's something that maybe doesn't necessarily translate to the field, but I know, you know, you guys do talk about mentality and stuff and how that does matter.
Absolutely. Well, confidence, I think, is such an underrated part of a football player's game, specifically the receiver and the cornerback. Like for a cornerback, he really takes you know, a lot of stones to match up with a guy, a high end athlete one on one. And same thing with a receiver, like to be able to, you know, you see a guy like Steve Smith is still living off confidence, you know, that my ball mentality. Yeah, so I totally think that matters.
Yeah, that's a great point. All right, well, a couple more. Now we have we kind of have an emergence of the smaller receiver, like you were talking about, and guys like Antonio Brown immediately comes to mind. He's kind of become the quintessential receiver that every up and coming like undersized receiver wants to emulate.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering if any receivers in this class, this rookie class, kind of jump out to you in a similar way that maybe Antonio Brown did when you charted him, right?
Yes, yeah. I did, and I don't really think any of them do, because he's so good. And that's not like a knock on these guys, these rookies, because they're some really good players. But Brown is, you know, he's in contention to be, you know, and I have a pretty good working average of, and like, success rate versus coverage and all these reception metrics for, you know, like a strong NFL average. And Brown is in the contention to be one of the best. So it's like, I really hate making, like, high-end comparisons like that to, you know, like, mid-round prospects. Like, I know people want, like, to say, oh, well, Tyler Lockett could be the next Antonio Brown. But I'm like, I don't see that. For one, I don't think that is a very good comparison, because I think that what makes Brown so special is that he's a small receiver but is also, you know, great at winning contested catches. He's really a physical player. And I don't see that from Lockett at all. And so, yeah, I don't really – I just think it's an unfair comparison because, like I said, Brown is one of the best receivers in the NFL. And he really is – he has those other trump cards to his game that make his size – not really an issue. Same thing with, like, an Odell Beckham. Like, I think that's a fair comparison. Those two guys are really similar. They scored really well and very similar to for me, too. But I don't see any rookie in this class that's going to, you know, that is like a direct comparison. Now, I think there are some late-round guys and some sleepers that could emerge and maybe end up being a great NFL receiver, but I don't think that any, like, jump off the page to me and be like, yeah, that guy really reminds me of Antonio Brown.
So, okay, well, let's just go ahead and talk a little bit about the sleeper guys then. So who are those receivers later in the rounds that you think could be impact guys?
Okay, well, I'll start off actually back with your Eagles again. And this is a guy who didn't even get drafted at all, and that's Devontae Davis out of UNLV. And if anybody's followed me on Twitter for a while, you know I really like this player. He's a guy that I gravitated to early on in the process. Big, 6'3", 220, wins, you know, at the catch point like it's his job, you know, very much like a natural, aggressive player there. And also, I think he has more quickness than he's given credit for. I don't think he's a stiff player. Like, his ceiling is not like as a possession receiver, because he can get down the field and he can separate. All of his issues are very correctable. And I think he went undrafted because he got hurt at the Senior Bowl, so he didn't really have a chance to shine. You know, that would have been a great place for him to show, like, hey, I'm from a small school, but I can play. But, you know, he got hurt there, so it just didn't happen. So he falls to the Eagles, you know, doesn't get drafted. I think he, like, if you look across their roster, the only other big receiver they have is Riley Cooper, and I think as an Eagles fan, you could probably attest to the fact that Cooper's just not very good.
No.
So, yeah, I'm not breaking any news here. But, yeah, so I think Davis has some room to grow on that roster. He's one I'm really excited about. Another guy that fell is Trey McBride out of William & Mary. You know, really, really excited about him. The whole time, players were getting drafted, it was just like, oh, I can't believe that McBride is – some of these guys, like some of these slappies are getting taken over him. McBride falls in the seventh round and ends up going to the Titans, you know, to grow up with Mariota. And, I mean, I kind of wish he had gone to a different team or whatever, because that's not the most stable organization or whatever.
Right, right.
But McBride is really a great prospect, in my opinion, especially for a small school guy. Like, he really dominated that competition and showed great technique and great great run after the catch ability, the ability to snare off-target passes. So I think he can really rise up that depth chart quickly. Apparently, you know, my good friend Ben Albright, who's really well-connected, told me that, you know, the reason he fell was, like, teams were concerned with his, like, diva attitude or whatever. But to me, I'm like, oh, who cares? You know, that what wide receiver isn't a diva, for one? That's kind of the outlier.
Yes, exactly.
He talked about attitude, and, you know, immediately when he fell to, like, pick 247 or whatever, he changed his Twitter name to, you know, pick 247. So, obviously, he's taken it to heart, so that makes me excited about his confidence. And there's a lot of other guys, you know, like DeAndre Smelter from Georgia Tech goes to San Francisco, Kenny Bell to Tampa Bay. You know, so you can tell there's a lot of guys, like late round guys, that I'm really excited about that could really emerge and have good opportunity.
Yeah, the Tennessee Titans now are a really fascinating team to me. Kind of like the Jaguars were last year. I don't know, because the Jaguars, you know, they went out and got Allen Robinson and Marquise Lee. They drafted two receivers, and both were pretty interesting prospects. Obviously, most of them battled injuries, and Blake Bortles struggled, so it didn't really become anything, but it was really interesting. I kept telling everybody, like, you know, keep an eye on Allen Robinson. At some point, the guy's going to be pretty good if that offense can get it together, for sure.
He's going to be a stud. Just sorry to go off.
No.
Man.
But, go ahead.
He's a guy I just wrote about recently, articles on thebackyardbanter.com. Allen Robinson scored really, really well in reception. I was pretty surprised, honestly, how well he scored. I think he could be one of the, you know, could overtake Sammy Watkins from like a dynasty and production standpoint to be like the third best wide receiver in that class. That's how good he is. I mean, just a complete receiver. So yeah, he's a guy. Good mention because I'm really excited about him as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And now you got the Titans, and you just mentioned, you know, obviously Dorial Green-Beckham is already kind of a potential diva receiver on a different level, and then you have Trey McBride there, and you know you got an unstable organization. It just seems like it's a recipe for even something might crazy might happen in that locker room at some point. I don't know. It'll be fascinating to watch though. All right, last question. And I did notice this, you know, cause I just had this for lunch the other day. I was eating Chipotle at Charlottesville, which is, by the way, if you go to a Charlottesville Chipotle, it's like you're seeing the Beatles live for the first time. Like the line will be out the door, and around the corner. And it's just amazing to me. And then I think you posted this a while back, and it just made me laugh. The fact that you thought that Chipotle was overrated, and I just wanted to get some more insight into what your thought process was on that regard.
Yeah, this question made me laugh. You sent an email to me, and actually, I was on a date last night, and the girl was talking about how much she liked Chipotle, and I was like, "It's pretty overrated."
Oh, nice. Well, at least you stayed in, you know. Stay true to your word. You're not going to be like, oh, you know, I do like Chipotle, you know?
I'm consistent. If nothing else, I'm consistent to a fault.
That makes me trust your reception perception that much more, actually.
No, I won't lie to you. I'll tell you the truth. The funny thing with Chipotle is, and I guess this is why I think it's overrated, and not that I don't think it's bad. Like, you know, this is the same thing with, like, football analysis. Like, just because I tell you I think a player is overrated doesn't mean I think he's bad. Like, I like Chipotle. There's a Chipotle in walking distance from where I live here in Fairfax, and I go there a lot because it's good and it's convenient. It's right there. However, I'm from, like, I grew up in white suburbia, and I still live in white suburbia. So, like, everybody here loves Chipotle. It's, like, constantly talking about how it's God's, like, gift to Earth.
Yes.
It's just not that good. And, like, I'm a bit of a snob. I'll be honest. Like, I'm a snob with food, with music, a lot of things. TV especially. So like when I think Mexican food, like I want like dirty, sloppy, greasy Mexican food from like, you know, a local joint or whatever.
Yeah.
Like Chipotle, you know, whatever. Like, I mean, like I said, I'll eat it, but it's not the, like, if I want Mexican food, it's not where I'm going.
Right. Well, if you ever a place like that I went to, kind of near you, not so much, but on Virginia Beach. It's a place called Gringo Taquero. Some of the best Mexican I've ever had, and that is a greasy place if you ever check it out. It's like a hole in the wall. All the tables are like painted, like it looks like somebody just went to an art class and just took a bunch of cardboard and just started painting pictures on there. It's a really cool place, and I understand what you're saying when it comes to the mainstream thing. I just ate there the other day though, and man, those salad bowls, I mean, all those ingredients, they just hit you on every cylinder. You get the beans and the rice and the chicken, and then you're good to go. And that's kind of my thing. The ingredients are pretty well, you know, good quality considering it's like a massive chain, and that was my big contention with it. But
the good thing about Chipotle, like I'm a super healthy eater.
So am I.
You know, I used to be like super fat. I used to be like 315 pounds. And I lost, you know, almost 100 pounds. So I really try to stay healthy and fit and everything. And the good thing about Chipotle is like it's really the only place you can go to and actually get something that's like relatively good for you.
Yes.
You know, like especially if you're out like and you're working and you need to grab lunch or whatever, like go there and get. I usually get a burrito bowl and I don't get the rice and everything. So
right.
Yeah, it's something that's really good for that.
Yes.
Like I said, it's just like Starbucks and Ugg boots and North Face. Like that's all anybody wants to talk about. I'm just like, there's better things out there, you know. So that's my whole point with Chipotle. Not that it's not good. It's just the general public, I think, overrates it.
I got you, man. All right. Well, I got my day job I got to get to, so we'll get you out of here. But thank you guys so much for listening, by the way. And hopefully Matt gave you guys some good insight on some of the rookie receivers and hopefully help you out deciding who you're going to draft for your fantasy league this year. Matt, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate having you, and we hope to have you on again maybe before the regular season starts.
Yeah, absolutely, George. Anytime. It's always fun.
Awesome, man. All right. Take care.
Hope you enjoyed it. Now give me a big bowl of pie with some ice cream on it. Good.